Welcome to another episode of Story Break, the Writer's Room podcast, where three Hollywood professionals have an hour to turn a humble idea into a pitch for an awesome movie. My name is Freddie Wong.
Hello, I am Will Campos.
I'm sorry, Will. My name is Freddie Wong.
Hello, thanks, Freddie, for playing along with the bit. I am Will Campos.
Hello, Will. Hello, Freddie. This is Matthew Arnold. Here for a very serious, no laughter edition of Story Break.
Gentlemen, we've received a number of complaints. This podcast is too funny, too hilarious. We've been asked by the American Podcast Commission to tone it down and to finally present a serious movie with no laughs whatsoever.
That's right.
I believe we are up to this task. There are those who doubt us.
Last episode, an episode, let's be honest, full of laughs. We promised that this episode would be a serious movie with no laughs. And so that is what we are doing today. That is the prompt, a serious movie with no laughs.
Gentlemen, the clock starts now. Let's start here. What is the most serious thing?
The election happens in 7 days.
Oh, jeez.
We have the American election. We have...
How about democracy?
We have democracy, which hangs in the balance. We have a global pandemic, which rages on. We have wildfires in Southern California. We have all manner of very, very serious, not funny things, of which we must make a serious, not funny movie about.
I was trying to think of the last movie I saw that was serious with no laughs, and then I was like, but it was still fake. So, like, there's no such thing as a serious movie.
What was the movie?
Oh, I don't know. Oh, the last movie I saw that had no laughs was, I mean, I watched Michael Haneke's Caché.
Ooh, la-di-da.
Yeah, that did not have any
fucking
laughs.
Matt Filmstruck Arnold over here watching Michael Haneke's Caché flexing on us.
Okay, serious movie. What is a serious movie? Well, what's the last serious movie you saw?
This is the most fraught episode of this podcast by far. Now, I will say a serious movie doesn't mean we have to do a movie about a serious subject, like a serious real world bummer subject. You can do a serious movie like that's just about, you know, people trying to live their lives, right? Wild Strawberries is a serious movie, but it's just about an old couple on a road trip.
Yeah, that's serious.
Just putting that out there.
Yeah, Superbad's a serious movie. It's just about two guys trying to get laid.
So on my computer, I have two charts. I'm just looking at my tabs that are still open, of which I have 100,000. But the first tab I switched to, I have two charts on my computer. One is political stress indicator, a chart of the Civil War buildup in the 1860s and then the modern America buildup up to today. And they look pretty similar. So that's serious.
Okay. I'm already looking for loopholes to get us out of this, but bear with me. I'm going to go through the Google dictionary definition of the word serious.
Oh my God.
Okay.
So that's just, and there's nothing as serious as the dictionary. So this feels on brand. So one, demanding careful consideration or application, i.e. marriage is a serious matter. Two, solemn or thoughtful in character or manner, as in her face grew serious. Careful or profound, we give serious consideration to the safety recommendations. Or requiring deep reflection, inviting a considered response. He bridges the gap between serious and popular music. Well, in that sense, I think every Story Break movie is serious. Because I don't know if we've been explicit about this on the podcast, but it's designed that after you listen to it, you should really go for like a long walk and think about the movie we just came up with for like an hour.
I think it's implicit that's what we've planned. I think everybody does that who listens to the show.
Acting or speaking sincerely and in earnest rather than in a joking or half-hearted manner. Actors who are serious about their work. Now, I would say that Jim Carrey, despite being, you know, the rubber-faced fart Smith who's stolen America's heart, is like a serious actor. He's serious about being funny. Significant or worrying because of possible danger or risk, not slight or negligible, substantial in terms of size, number, or quality. Now, this, to me, is the most intriguing loophole, because, like, I would argue that Michael Bay's masterpiece, The Rock, is a serious movie.
Because there's much bulletin car chases in it.
Okay.
Because it's, you know, serious in that kind of, like, serious meaning, like, it's radical, you know? All right, Matt, what's your idea?
Matt, let's hear yours, and I got one idea.
I have two thoughts that might point us in a direction.
Go for
it. Since we started with, and it's also my fault, because I said we had to do a serious movie with no laughter. One is a complete joke, but might be possible. This is my first idea, which is it came from you saying we need a loophole and start reading the dictionary. This will feel kind of like a million movies we've done, but hey, what are we going to do? It's 8:50 in the morning, so here it is. You do like a stand-up comedian or somebody who like just got their job on SNL, like just got hired to SNL or somebody kind of like on the verge of their career.
They just got their podcast signed to Maximum Fun.
They never take things seriously. Their partner's leaving them or their parents are like, why don't you just take anything serious? And then, you know, or they're a kid that every time they pick up from school, they're just making jokes and they don't act like a real parent. Like Wishes Upon a Star was like, I wish my dad or mom was just more serious. And all of a sudden that person has a curse now, where they can't laugh and they have to do everything seriously. And also, like, the first day that they like got hired for a Weekend Update and then they just like straight up report the news. They're like, what the hell's going on? Like, you're supposed to be funny. And they're like, why? Like, I don't get what's the point of being funny. And then it'll be about how, like, it's a balance. Like, life needs to be a little bit serious and a little bit funny. So that was one thought.
What was the other one?
The other one is we just have to do a sequel to the movie we just did, but serious.
So the sequel to the Lincoln Logs movie,
yes,
which canonically ends. Oh, so what you're proposing is, so because that one canonically ends with him married to Hatsune Miku in the future.
That's like saying like Saving Private Ryan after the war.
So you're saying that we do like our sequel is like Marriage Story, but it's about this yes. guy and his anime Vocaloid wife is what you're yes. proposing.
Yes, I'm proposing that we just.
And she tries to pound the wall like Adam Driver, but because she's a Vocaloid, it doesn't work.
And she's dealing with the existential crisis, and there's like all of a sudden there's a law that's passed about anime girls or, you know, computer generated people aren't gonna have the same rights as normal people, and then their marriage is gonna get torn apart because he's
wait
like,
a second, is Blade Runner 2049 just the sequel to our Lincoln Logs movie? Because
oh
isn't
gosh.
That what that is? Is it yeah. Ryan Gosling? He's basically the main character all grown up and falls in love with another Vocaloid girl.
That's true. So those are my two options.
Okay,
all right, Freddie, you said you had one.
Yes, imagine if you will. The year is 2020.
Okay.
I'm imagining it.
All right. This is the story of a lowly employee in a faltering business trying to save it at all costs. That business, Sirius XM Satellite Radio. The okay. Sirius movie is actually about satellite radio. The thing that I don't understand how anybody buys. I think it's a parent thing. I can't imagine going into a fucking car dealer and they're like, hey, what options would you like? Would you like the rust coating? Would you like that? And you're like, no, 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 my man. Subscribe me to satellite radio. I don't have anything. Who the fuck is you still using satellite radio? Could you imagine asking for that in your car?
People still do satellite radio. That's a thing.
Who? Yeah, but like it costs, it's insane to me. It costs money.
But to yes and what Freddie is saying, this is good because there is.
And it doesn't work if there's a tree above you. Like what the fuck?
In terms of a loophole, the idea that we're doing a show kind of like a Mary Tyler Moore show or something. If we're doing something about Sirius XM, about a show called No Laughs, we're technically doing our prompt. And then we could make it about anything, as long as it's about a radio show.
Then we can subject our audience to the same wacky bullshit we throw at them every week. Now, as long as we're talking loopholes on that, I have one more thought I want to get out there, but I do based on Freddie's thing. We could also do this about the constellation Sirius.
Okay.
Sirius designated
wacky alien movie.
But so Sirius is also known as the Dog Star because its main star is Canis Majoris.
That's the logo of Sirius Satellite Radio.
So we could do like a movie about a cool space dog.
Okay, space dog.
So Sirius is a star, not a constellation.
Hear me out. Hear me out. Hear me out. The Sirius XM guy is like, golly gee whiz, I want to save Sirius XM because no one's listening to space radio anymore.
Because Howard Stern is
and
quitting.
And then a radical space dog comes to
yeah,
Earth.
Yeah, yeah.
Like it's like Ziggy Stardust
down.
With a Ziggy Stardust was like a serious movie. It's like Ziggy Stardust with a cool dog.
A space dog called Canis Majoris.
Yeah.
Major Dog.
Major.
Oh my god.
It's the sequel to Major Pain and it's called Major Dog.
He's running away from his evil dad, Alpha Canis Majoris.
It's called Major Doggo. And he only speaks in like cutesy dog speak that people use.
Okay, here we go. Here we go. A Sirius XM radio host of the show No Laughs, a serious news program whose life is on the rocks.
Yeah, yeah, it's counter programming to like Howard Stern
yes.
and stuff.
Yeah.
A meteorite lands in their backyard, and inside is not a meteorite, it's actually a small ship in the shape of a dog, and it opens, and what's that? There's a dog in it.
The ship is in the shape of a dog.
Space dog.
Matt, we didn't land on the moon in like a fucking man shaped.
Like, and it's a space dog. He's like, I'm here. I'm supposed to be traveling to my planet Sirius. He's like, well, you've made a mistake, a really big mistake, because actually I'm not Sirius XM. I'm actually just a program on it. But I get it. It's a coincidence, I guess.
Should have taken a left at Albuquerque.
And then, yeah.
And then nothing funny happens.
And the dog's like, man, our species loves comedy. He's like, well, unfortunate for you, I don't like comedy. I don't laugh. That's my problem. I don't laugh. I haven't laughed ever since my dad died of laughing. It's a person whose dad laughs so hard they die.
Oh, that happens.
I'm sure it does. Tickle till you die.
So that was going to be my other idea, was that you do a horror movie like Bird Box or fucking the Shut Up movie or whatever. And you do, it's called Don't Laugh. And if you laugh, you die. Yeah.
Okay. A serious movie, yes. This horrible torture method can lead to death by aneurysm. It may sound like a joke, but tickling is a legitimate torture method.
Oh, God.
In extreme cases, can result in death. This is a wild opening, by the way. I don't know where we've gone.
Anything in an extreme case can result in death. Like wearing a hat too tightly in an extreme case can result in death.
In extreme cases, tightening your tie has resulted in death.
Breathing in too many scented candles has been known.
I mean, the point being is you could tickle somebody to death. Okay.
A lot of threads. Let's try and like weave them together. Let's try and braid them. Let's all sit in a circle and braid these threads.
All right. So I feel like the laugh horror movie is like, it feels like a Twilight Zone episode. The comedian makes a deal with the devil where he's like, I wish I killed when I went on stage, and then every time he tells a joke now people laugh to death.
Wouldn't the new Joker movie been so much cooler that if instead of shooting people in the head he tickled them to death? That'd be so much more intense. Can you imagine if he tickled Robert De Niro on stage?
So Matt, you actually bring up something that I thought about when Will was reading the dictionary. Wow, that's not a sentence you should really say when for a podcast that's supposed to entertain people. But
when Will's reading the dictionary, the thoughts I have aren't for public consumption.
Okay,
you know what I mean.
All right.
Okay, so when Will's reading the dictionary, I was like, this reminds me of something. What satisfies all of these requirements? I realize the answer is the serious story of a child who lost their parents and becomes a crime fighter, aka the story of Batman. So it's Batman, except Joker tickles people.
It's a Batman story with a Joker, and it's called No Laughs. You could totally, I bet you there's a comic with a Joker called No Laughs.
Oh boy.
Wait. Now, Freddie, you brought in Batman. Now we got Space Dog Batman, Tickle Torture, Sirius XM. Okay.
Oh, no, here's what it is. The dog comes out. It's the cutest dog ever. Everyone loves this dog, right? Space yes. dog. Who wouldn't love a space dog? Are you kidding? You don't even have to go to the pound. Anyway, but what happens on the way in? The dog knocks out Sirius Prime, the main satellite for satellite radio. I don't know how satellite radio works, but I'm just going to just go with me here.
Okay.
So now he's got a real problem. This dog blew up his satellite radio, and now nobody can listen to Howard Stern in the morning. But he's such a cute dog. And now with the help of this dog, he's going to have to relaunch a satellite. But the problem is America's not launching satellites anymore. He's going to need to sneak into communist China to launch a satellite to save Sirius satellite radio. The end.
All right. That's the episode. We did a good job, Freddie.
Here's the problem, guys. It's just the way our brains work. We're always going to want to zag and color outside the line. So by being like, we're going to do a serious movie, that's how you wind up getting like Sirius the Wacky Alien Dog Goes to Communist China, right? So as a thought exercise, and I know we should be zeroing in on our idea, but as a thought exercise, because I feel like whatever we do as the prompt, we inevitably want to run screaming in the most opposite direction of it. What if we spend the next 10 minutes trying to come up with the funniest movie of all time? Because then I bet what we'll actually come up with will be really unfunny and serious, and then we can use that to do our episode.
See, the reason we run is because of the fear of failure. So now that you've set up to having to come up with a funny movie, we're going to clam up and be insecure.
Yeah.
About trying to come up with a funny movie.
No, that's easy. It's a movie about a fish that farts too much.
I mean, the funniest movie would just be watching me at home for 2 hours. I'm a laugh riot, everybody. You just do a documentary.
Matt, if you got stuck on a desert island, how long do you think you'd be able to entertain yourself?
Forever.
Yeah, me too.
What is serious mean to you? Like, I know we've had a lot of fun figuring out ways to get out of this, but I think we just, to Matt's point, we're afraid of failure. We just have to open the gates of our own personal hell here and walk in.
I mean, to me, serious stuff, you know, it's not about what it is. It's about the mentality that
about
your characters
how it
take.
Is. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like,
what's your favorite serious movie? Let's start there. What's your favorite, what you would call a serious film?
This is part of the problem is like, I think the three of us, I might work well together. When we said serious, we were thinking of it as mockingly, right? Mm-hmm. It was an element of like, when I think of serious, or when I was saying it that way, I was thinking of kind of like Oscar Beatty, kind of artificial film that takes itself seriously, as opposed to, like, again, I think Equilibrium is mm-hmm. serious. Like, that's why I like it. Like, they take that subject matter serious. I think a lot of comedies are serious, right? I think as long as the art is being honest and is trying to say something, the manner, whether it's a comedy or a tragedy or whatever, is serious. So, you know, Fury Road is serious to me. It's as serious as Schindler's List. Like, it's not as mm-hmm. important or tragic, but it's taking its art and its subject matter just as seriously.
Interesting.
So the answer is every good movie is a serious movie.
So essentially what you're saying is we walked ourselves into, like, we're going to do a good movie is the premise for this week. And not only a good movie, but a good movie with no jokes, which is maybe even harder to do, is a good movie that doesn't have any jokes in it. So, okay. All right.
So for example, like, most Terrence Malick movies don't really have a lot of jokes. Like, there's not a lot of laughter in a Terrence Malick movie.
But could you imagine you're watching, like, a really intense Terrence Malick movie and he just, like, drops a fart joke halfway through? Could you imagine how awesome that would land?
He would make it work.
He'd make it work.
What does a serious movie mean to you, Will?
So, I mean, I'd agree, you know, like, because I'm a child, you know, to me, like, Wrath of Khan is a serious movie. Gladiator's a serious movie. Gladiator's probably, like, in terms of both being a really good movie and a dumb Oscar bait movie, I think Gladiator's probably my favorite serious movie.
Oh, the platonic ideal.
I think it being about serious subject matter is also probably what I'm thinking of, like something that would, like, if you were to separate and you said the subject matter, right? Like, if somebody said, I think Fury Road's a serious movie, but if I were just to take the subject matter and be like, hey, let's discuss the idea of war-torn civilizations that are specialized in ammo mm-hmm. or gasoline.
It's a goofy fantasy world.
And they have car chases, like, oh, that's not a serious thing. Whereas I said, hey, I'm doing a movie about, like, you know, the diamond trade and exploitation of workers. I'm like, that's serious.
Yeah, but I think you can do a premise that is serious that is not, like, political, or not even political, that is not topical. You don't have to be talking about an issue.
Yeah, talking about the realistic separation in a marriage.
Yeah, Marriage Story is a serious movie.
That's a serious subject matter because it's about, it's going to happen. Like, it's a thing that's real.
It's about life.
It's about life.
All right. Okay. So, what do we want to... Okay.
So, Space Talk. Okay.
What do we want to do this serious movie about? What's, like, the... Like, getting old? Like, do we do it about, you know, the remembrance of your childhood and how you can't go back to it? Is this a movie about death and dying? I mean, we kind of done that with the Chicken Cross the Road movie.
How about a movie about coming to terms with your dreams, like, what you want to do, whether it was, you know... making movies, like, whether it was like making the newest Netflix TV show mm-hmm. or whatever, is not going to work out.
So it's like accepting that what you wanted for your life isn't going to happen.
Yes.
Interesting.
And how
so it's all a movie for grownups is the other kind of, I think, implication of a serious movie, right?
Yes.
So we're talking about a movie, like, it's the anti-follow your dreams movie. It's the, like, hey, you followed your dreams and sometimes it doesn't pan out, and being a mature person means sometimes, you know, like, being happy with the life you have. Sort of, right?
Which is actually why I think I always remember this, because I remember when my older brother, who actually, I think, listens to this, so sorry, Jeff. Mm-hmm. Not sorry, but I remember specifically when we were younger, he didn't like Nightmare Before Christmas because he was like, oh, it essentially just tells you to stay in your lane. Mm-hmm. But actually, I think one of the secret reasons for why Nightmare Before Christmas endures is because compared to almost any other kids' movie or Disney movie, actually, I think that the subject matter is essentially pretty close to something like Wind Rises or anything else, which is like, mm-hmm. this is life. Like, yeah, like, having aspirations is good, but, like, just, you're not Christmas, man. Like, just deal with it. Like, you know, that's maturity, is actually, like, giving up on your dreams is sometimes, I feel like so much is about, hey, you have to have these dreams. It's like, maybe sometimes your dreams are too big.
Mm.
Like, that's reality. Like, that's just the way it is. And actually, the idea that your dreams could come true is already a privileged place in the first place, that, like, enough stuff hasn't happened in your life that you can give it up. Like,
yeah, or that, you know, the meaning of your life is wrapped around placating your ego's desire for achievement and accomplishment.
Yes.
Interesting.
Because it is. I mean, that movie really is just like somebody being like, I'm Halloween, and being like, you know what? I really want to do this. And for the good reasons, like, this brings joy to kids. And then the end of that movie is like, no.
You know what the tricky part about that is that, like, to even get to make a big budget blockbuster children's movie means that you got to fucking do your dreams. So then it's like Tim Burton being true. Like, hey guys, like maybe cool it a little bit. I'm following your dreams. So it's like, fuck you, Tim Burton. You're making this big movie. Blood, that's what I want to do.
I mean, that's essentially what Soul of His Travels about, right? Mm. It's literally like, I want to do a serious movie. And then it's like, who are you? You're a fucking rich director. Don't tell us people who are like working, like what it's like to be a worker. Like, make the dumb comedies for us. Dance Monkey. Like, make the escapism that we want because you're lucky enough to do it. I don't want to hear point of view on, you know, what it means to be poor.
The plight of the poor.
Yeah.
Great movie.
What's great about Sullivan's Travels is it's the artist turning that on themselves.
Yeah.
What's interesting to me about a guy like Tim Burton making a movie like Nightmare Before Christmas, it reminds me of, like, I remember Freddie at one point talking about, like, there's this trend a while ago where, like, all these YouTubers were starting to do feature films, and, like, there's this recurring plot theme where, like, the motivation was always, like, and I lost all 6 million of my subscribers. And it's like, talk about the most fucking niche, like, motivation that would only, like, someone who's been in that very specific, you know, scenario yeah. would ever empathize with. So it's like the idea of, like, as an artist doing a movie that's like, wow, what, like, the scariest thing in the world to me would be not getting to do the fucking thing as an adult that I wanted to do when I was six, right? And it's like, yeah, that's most yeah. fucking people have already gone through this. Most people have yeah. already fucking dealt with this, and they're going to the movies to fucking enjoy themselves. So it's like, it's just excruciating to watch a movie.
Most
about
people this. Grew up much earlier and realized they weren't going to be an astronaut, and yeah. they fucking just, like, pivoted their expectations and live a good life.
They don't need a fucking movie from someone who lucked into being an astronaut talking about, like, hey, maybe you won't get to be an astronaut, though, because they're trying to work out their own fear of they might not get to be an astronaut forever.
Look, we may not have a movie right now, but so far we are...
We're working through some stuff.
We're achieving the prompt of serious and no laughs, so that's good.
Okay, what if it's about an astronaut?
Okay,
who wants... Because an astronaut is the most...
No, but Will brings up the
aspirational
point.
Goal.
The audience doesn't want us to fucking talk about serious shit. The audience wants a space dog who comes down and fixes the life of a bad Sirius XM radio.
I did not say that the audience does not want a serious movie. I just don't know that the audience wants a movie about, like, hey, you might not get everything you ever wanted in your life. Like, I just don't know that that's a compelling theme for most
but
people.
My point is that is a compelling theme because literally... Name a movie more ubiquitous than Nightmare Before Christmas. That movie has lasted longer and better than almost anything. Even something like Toy Story essentially has that theme as well. Like, it is like, you're a toy.
Oh, yeah. Hey, you're not Andy's favorite toy anymore.
Yeah, you do that in the right way.
Interesting. All right.
People see through bullshit.
Okay. All right. So what are we... Okay, let's do it, because we're half an hour in and we need to fucking figure something out. We've got only half an hour to land a very serious good movie with no jokes, so this will be interesting.
Okay.
So let's go with this theme. I think that's interesting. You know, kind of in the back of my head, so one of my favorite, what I would say, serious movies is Umbrellas of Cherbourg.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying that horribly wrong. It is a French musical. It's like a big influence on La La Land. And it's about, the whole movie is sung. It's just a beautiful film. You should watch it. But it's about this girl who works in an umbrella shop, and she falls in love with this fella. And then he's got to go off to war. And, like, you know, then she's waiting for him at war, but she's not hearing from him and she's worried.
Sorry, it's literally an umbrella shop?
Yeah, it's the Umbrellas of the Cherbourg is where she's from. And then that's the umbrella store. So it's like, it's kind of their lovelorn romance. And then she, as he's gone, like, she realizes that she's pregnant and that she hasn't heard from him. She thinks he's leaving. Anyway, I don't want to spoil the movie for anyone, but it has this heartbreaking ending where, fuck, I can't even. All right. Just skip forward.
Where global warming obviates all need for umbrellas.
The end of the movie is, and again, skip forward if you don't want to hear this. The end of the movie is that it doesn't work out between the two of them, right? She falls in love with another guy. She finds out she's pregnant with the other guy's kid. Like, he loves her anyway and accepts her, and they get married. And then the guy eventually comes back home and realizes that the girl has left. And then, but the end of the movie is like, he's working at a gas station and she's in the car. Like, she comes to the gas station and just sees him. And it's like this sort of, like, poignant, heartbreaking. It's very much like the end of La La Land. It's like this, like, what could have been kind of moment. And then they go their separate ways. And there's something very bittersweet about that. And, like, that to me is, like, one of the most devastatingly, again, it's like a serious movie, I think, does a good job of, like, not bullshitting you about it. It's that wrestling between the happy ending and dealing with real life. Like, again, Star Trek II: The Wrath of Khan ultimately is about a man struggling with death, right? It's a guy who's having a midlife crisis and who, you know, has always sort of, like, denied death and outsmarted it. And then his best friend dies and he has to deal with that. And by facing it, he is, you know, sort of reborn. So Is there an angle on that? Like, I think about that moment at the end of Umbrellas where it's the two of them meet. And again, they do a very similar thing in La La Land where she sees him at the jazz club. And then
La La Land ripped this movie off entirely. Holy shit.
I mean, don't fucking get me started. But yeah, the moment at the end of La La Land, they had the fantasy sequence where it's like, what could have been? But now they're in their different lives, right? And I wonder if you're going to do, if it's this love affair between someone and their dream, whether it's to, let's not make it being a fucking the Hollywood professional. Let's just not go there. But like, you know, if it's someone who wants to be a stunt driver or like a fucking
astronaut
or whatever, right?
Astronaut's the most serious thing you could possibly want to be. You can't joke in space.
Here's a thought. I don't want to necessarily run away from, because again, it's also like, you know, let me see if this throws you, because I was just thinking about ending that's in that sort of like Umbrella or La La Land sort of vibe. So people in Southern California may know K-Rock. There used to be this show, Kevin and Bean, I listened to like my entire life. And I think I've told this to maybe both of you, actually. I forget if it's Kevin or Bean. But anyways, they've both been radio show hosts for their entire life. But there's something that I thought was hilarious, which is they found out as they're getting ready to retire, they found out about Truck Simulator. And in Truck Simulator, there are radio stations. And actually, you can start a radio station in Truck Simulator. So there are people who just like run radios for Truck Simulator.
I listen to them. They're great.
So the idea of, for example, somebody trying to be a radio show host, like that's their dream. And it's especially nowadays, right? It's like fucking impossible to get into, very poor paying. Let's say they discover, like, you know, they have a kid that they're neglecting and a marriage has fallen apart. And they're, you know, they're really pushing for this dream of theirs, you know, being this like talk show host. And something about like it ending with like bringing their kid to school and just being a responsible person and getting a real job, but then still having this little thing on the side where it's like at night they log into Truck Simulator and they run their own radio station and they're liked by the people, you know, that it's like the small versions, like they still get to pursue something they enjoy doing, but it's not going to be their entire life because life just didn't work out that way, sort of thing.
I don't know if I need the tidy little button at the end with like that you still get to have the thing in miniature as a treat. But I'm intrigued. The other thing I was going to say, so yes, there is kind of like, you're talking about a story where someone's going to have a push and a pull, right? Between like, you know, there's sort of like, what we're saying is eventually going to be the thing that they have to learn to live with that is their life. And they're going to find a kind of beauty in it, right? Like, and they're going to, you know, be able to, you know, accept that. Again, there's another brilliant movie about this kind of thing called Babette's Feast, which you should all go check out, which is about a woman who is like a chef in Paris that moves to the countryside and, you know, sort of has given up on being a, it's just, you just worth checking out. The first place my mind went was to do, because I was going to say that I feel like the idea of it being familial obligation just feels a little like obvious to me. Like, I think the first place my mind went was the, did you guys ever see the movie Warrior?
No.
Yes, I think I did.
This is also, I guess, the plot of that Kevin Smith movie, Here Comes the Boom. Like, in that movie, he's a teacher who wants to become a UFC fighter, right? And then it's like, you're pursuing this glory, but then it's like it would be someone realizing like, I'm a good teacher. I give something to this community in a meaningful way. I think we've got the right heart. We got the heart of the thing, but it is like, what is the right exoskeleton for this
movie?
Yeah,
I mean, I would also say like in terms of like the bun, I think those stories aren't about just like not having something. For example, like both Umbrellas and La La Land, like they don't get what they wanted with each other, but they like they find love. They find other.
Yes, that's true. Yes.
Also,
yes,
they almost comically get exactly what they wanted.
Yeah, well, La La Land's a whole other thing. Or like, for example, I mean, I'll just bring this up like similar to, because who knows when this movie will ever come out, but like we have a script called Terrorist Number One that like the main character wants to be an action star, wants to be like a movie star, and they don't get that. But the last moment of the movie is him doing goofy faces and entertaining his kid.
Yeah,
what he loves. And he's also like becomes like a martial arts teacher, like, or even like Nightmare Before Christmas. It's like the things that makes him great, that he, why he wanted Christmas, is like next year he's gonna do Halloween better than ever, you know? So it's about like, you know, it's okay. I think that's so opposite to like most of American exceptionalism. Like there's nothing shameful about embracing your current status and making the best of it, as opposed to constantly having to go further, because that's a never-ending struggle.
I feel like we've got the theme. We've got, I think, kind of what the arc of the movie is. What we need to find is the world of the film and like what the main character's aspiration is. So let's take a quick break, sacrifice some of our own artistic integrity in the pragmatism of the almighty dollar, and we'll hit you on the flip.
We interrupt the podcast you're listening to tell you about another podcast. That's right. We Got This with Mark and Hal.
That's correct, Mark. This is Hal. We do the hard work for you, settling all of the meaningless arguments you have with your friends.
So tune in every week on the Maximum Fun Network for We Got This with Mark and Hal, and all your questions will be asked, and answered.
You're welcome. All right, that's enough of that.
We got this.
Okay, so we're back.
Okay, I got it.
You got it?
It's called Hocus Pocus 2, which has just been announced.
Mm-hmm. Hocus Pocus 2?
It's about these witches, right?
Okay.
I'm kidding.
Oh, I was about to say, maybe it's a daughter who doesn't have magical powers and realizes that she's never going to be a witch.
Oh, I was going to say, or it's about a wannabe magician.
Yeah. Okay, so yeah, okay, magic is a good one, right? And it's a world I know pretty
well. I
mean,
magic as far as being like, you know, something that, you know, I think people fall in love with and is their dream, but also being an incredibly tough business to make a fucking living in, you know? And like, I don't know, I could see that being...
Yeah, wannabe magician is about as difficult in terms of like the number of people who are successful at it as being specifically like, I want to be a primetime talk show host. It's like, okay, well, there's three of them.
Yeah.
So that's,
yeah.
That's your,
yeah, it's that
like,
level.
It's one
it
thing to be like, I
want to
be a talk show host, be like, I want to be primetime. It's like, okay,
or
great.
Or I just want to host like, you know, TRL, or I want to host on TV. It's like, okay, you could maybe do that. You could do some news stuff or what have you. Yeah. But you don't say I want to be a magician. It's like, you are aiming for the job that like six other people have ever had.
Yeah. There's like one or two like financially successful magicians at a time. Right.
The other thing with being a magician that I think is great is that, so for one, it's very cinematic, it's always very fun, it's very hard, you instantly get why people look down on this person. Again, the first place my mind goes is like, there's also like The Wrestler is a movie that deals with these themes, right? And The Wrestler has that great moment at the end where it's like, no dude, don't go out on stage, you're gonna fucking die. Like, you could do if this person, like, again, like, especially if we were gonna set it like a little bit more old timey, like you set it in the 30s or 40s or something like that. Oh, what's more serious than a movie set in the Depression? Right? Mm-hmm. And you do, it's this aspiring, and it's almost like a Charlie Chaplin kind of character, like this aspiring magician, right? Who's trying to, you know, to make it big, you know, and like, you know, like the, all this stuff, right? Like that could be the world of your story, but you could do that. Like they think like their big break is going to be to do some really risky, like death-defying escape artist kind of thing, right? Like that, I think bringing those elements in there too, like I get the feeling of like how you can put genuine suspense in a story like that and make it compelling.
I can see that.
They then realize that they might be able to use magicians to fight the Nazis in World War II.
You say this, there's a book called The War Magician about Jesper Maskelyne, who was a magician in the 30s who went to the British Army, was sent to Egypt, and then used his skills as a magician to save Alexandria from German bombers and hide the Suez Canal from them. So he came up with all kinds of camouflage methods.
Yeah, no, I was about to say the idea of like using like certain camouflage or like visual tricks is, no, I mean, freaking during war, they take all sorts of weird jobs to be like, you know, give us a leg up.
The problem with doing that is that like the end of this movie can't be the guy getting to be a fucking superhero who saved the world.
I was saying,
it would be like this movie would be like our guy gets the idea to do that, and then someone's like, no, this other guy's gonna do it.
No, I was saying that would be like the inciting incident. This is a serious war movie. Mm-hmm. But anyways, I don't think you need to do it in the Great Depression because it's like that. I don't know. It almost like deflates it where it's similar to it being about war. It's like, okay, so like, yeah, this guy should be dealing with like the Great Depression as opposed to like, again, like make it a modern. There's also like a romanticism about like magic back then. It's like nowadays it's like, again, to the point there are like, unless you're essentially Penn and Teller or whoever's like the hottest, whatever version of Chris Angel, like that's it, right? There's nobody.
Yeah.
And now, especially if you want to do real series and it's like COVID times, it's like the magic castle and any magic, there's nothing, right? So you could be like an Instagram magician, but that's almost as much like VFX or whatever. Like, yeah, it's a tough, essentially it's like a hobby for most people. Or if they take it very seriously, they have, you know, some other ways to make money.
I just want to quickly correct the record and say that all the stuff about Maskelyne, everyone was like, Maskelyne, not Maskelyne. But everyone was like, this is actually like probably not true. And he was a guy who kind of made that up a little bit. And they tried to do two movies, including one with Benedict Cumberbatch and Tom Cruise. But they're like, actually, turns out none of this is true. So they haven't made those movies.
We got to get a magician. Okay.
Magician.
Freddie, you're...
Modern day is much, much more pathos in the modern
day. All right, Freddie, lead us down the road as to what this character could look like, because you are a Magic Castle member and a hobbyist magician yourself. You've studied the world and the culture quite a bit.
Well, it's weird. Six-pack abs. Like, across the board, six-pack abs. Like, or eight, but usually six minimum. Mm-hmm. Perfect eyesight. So to me, let me just try to think about this for a second. Generally, everyone who gets into it in their teenage years. They're an indoor kid as opposed to an outdoor kid. Because if you're an outdoor kid during your teenage years, you're playing sports. And if you're an indoor kid, you're, you know, doing them, you're making podcasts and you're playing video games and making podcasts about video games and doing what we did, or becoming an amateur magician at the Magic Castle. The stereotypes And there's, you know, that ring true that I've seen even are stuff like people who got into it because they thought it would be a way of like social lubricant, a way of like being able to talk to people, conversation striker upper, a way to make yourself seem more interesting at parties, right? Because what could be more interesting than someone who can defy the laws of, you know, whatever, right?
Like somebody that's really attractive.
Somebody who is really attractive. But barring that, Matt, you know, you can make yourself more attractive by making these four coins disappear underneath these cards. So you have sort of that style of it, especially, again, especially in the modern side of it. Internet was obviously a big part of getting people to learn about it and getting people into that world. The whole David Blaine like magic special thing was huge in terms of getting people interested in it. The idea of being able to impress strangers, to impress anybody with your abilities. There's a degree of like self-aggrandizement in it, right? It's a degree of like, look at what I can do that no one else can do. There's an attention-seeking behavior to it inherently.
Okay. The first place I want to go with this is that I think my normal instinct would be to like put the main character like as far down on the totem pole as possible. And they're like, no one knows who they are and blah, 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 blah. But like, what about this character like on the moment that they think this is going to be their huge break? That this is someone who's on the cusp, they feel, of superstardom. Like they are worked so hard and they are so close to the thing they want that they could reach out and touch it, right? Like to me, like, yeah, I think you want to seduce the audience with the world. You want the audience to want this as badly as this person wants
sure,
it,
sure,
I think.
Sure.
Do you know what I mean? And so like the first thing that popped in my mind would be to do like a Slumdog Millionaire type story in terms of that flashback structure. It's like, could you do like it's someone who's going on to a show like Penn and Teller's Fool Us or who's going on America's Got Talent or something like that? Like they are about to get their huge break. This could be the thing that puts them onto the national spotlight or whatever. Like, I don't know. That was the first place my mind went.
America's Got Talent's not a bad one. A lot of folks find their start as far as like being, again, there's more than one or two professional magicians, but yes, America's Got Talent is very a common thread right now.
Well, no, I mean, I like that because I was going to say, I think that is where, for somebody to be like, yes, the real story isn't like, oh, this person has a dream and like they're, you know, stop before they even try. It's like, again, there's like a saying like anybody, this isn't true, but it's like the saying is like, it's one thing to like anybody can get like a movie made. It's like getting the second one made that's harder or any variation of that. There's a saying because it's like you try hard enough, like, you know, shot in the dark, shock and approach, like something will happen. That next step, like being consistent, being a professional is a totally different thing. Like if you try
that's
hard
true,
enough as a
actually.
Magician,
yeah,
like,
yeah,
you can get on Fool Us. Like, you know, you'll get on Fool Us. How many people have been on Fool Us?
Yeah,
like a ton, right? Even how many people have.
So you're saying like this is someone who did well, like who has gotten past that first step, but, you know, they are struggling to, again, it's now it is the grind that separates, you know, the.
Yes. And now it's like, well, I fooled them. Like, of course I'm going to be a professional magician. It's like, again, the number of America's Got Talent, like winners or people that were on there, like, where are they now? Right. It's like most of them have probably, you know, have normal jobs now because the number of people who can make a complete living off of something, you know, quote unquote frivolous or an entertainment is very small. And there's nothing wrong in that. Like the number of people that are like, again, you probably had teachers. Like I had a teacher that was literally a person who still was the last person to do a specific trapeze move. He had been a trapeze.
What?
Yeah. He's the weirdest teacher, but just a strange guy with crazy life. And yeah, he did like a trapeze move without like a net. And since soon after that, they started putting a net and like that move like isn't done anymore. And he was like the last person
weird.
To do it. And it's
that's
like,
cool.
Yeah, I mean, he's a English teacher. He's a great guy. He's got a wife and kids. Like he's happy. Like, you know, but he was a circus dude at the beginning.
Oh, interesting.
It's like, you know, at a certain point you make that pivot. So yes, let's say somebody who had their break, like had a break. Like this is the thing that's driving them. Like I got something.
Okay.
They got Video Game High School made.
Okay.
So they got onto America's Got Talent and they wowed them all. And now what? Is what you're kind of saying, right?
Yeah, so let me throw in a question at you guys, because here's what, like, I'm in my producer brain right now, right? And producers get 1,000 sad indie scripts about every serious subject under the sun, right? And I feel like the cigar-chomping producer in my head is going, yeah, boys, but what's the fucking hook, right? Like, even a serious movie's got to have a hook. Like, what's the, what is it that isn't just this, I'm watching this guy just struggle and flail about forever, right? Like, what's the, so yes, I think you're right. You have a status quo. You have a magician who has had some modicum of success and is trying to turn a sort of like, you know, like he's trying to get to the next stage of his career.
It's at the cusp of turning into a full on.
Yes.
Blow it up into the career that he's always wanted sort of thing. Yeah.
But then what are they going to do that is going to, you know, be the premise of our movie.
He's going to jump from the sky, like, you know, without a parachute, like the highest parachute.
Yeah, is it I'm going to attempt some crazy ass trick? They discover some old timey trick that they're going to do, or they're going to, you know, like, again, it's like a high concept if it's like a David Blaine type stunt, right? Like, I'm going to lock myself in a fucking bubble.
Okay, here we go. Here we go. All right. Really quick. Here's an easy one, right? Like, he could be like, I'm going to recreate the greatest trick of all time, which was, in some circles, when Houdini made an elephant disappear, thought to be absolutely impossible in the New York Hippodrome, a big venue at the time, right? Crazy. Only recently did we ever even figure out how he did it, but like, it's this gigantic, crazy, seemingly impossible trick because they believe that, like, that's what the world needs and that's what the world should be interested in. But just kind of like in Houdini's time, it kind of like didn't really go off that huge. There's a reason why when you think about famous magic tricks, you think about the Statue of Liberty disappearing and you don't really think about the one time Houdini made a elephant disappear, right? Like, there's things that are relics of that era that have lasted, and Houdini making an elephant disappear, not that big, not that impactful. That can get you to an ending there where it's about an understanding for that person, right? To kind of talk about the themes that we're talking about, which is like, it's not about trying to like change the world with this. You're never going to be able to do it that way. It's about sort of, you know, satisfying yourself with, you know, making and doing it for yourself, as opposed to being like, I have to do this giant thing and it's going to make the world love me.
I'd actually have them do it, essentially. I'd have them
He successfully does one-ups Houdini's.
And it's like, people clap, and then like the next day, it's like, okay.
They move on to the next thing. Yeah. I was just thinking that. Like, yeah. They're like, all right, that was pretty good.
And you have to be happy with it. And then he's like,
and the movie's about you seeing this person like pour all of their effort and energy into figuring this out and like going like just all of this. It's about the journey and not the destination, right? It's about them going to like, oh, you know what? Okay, here's one. They've talked about this in magic for years, the Swami trick, right? So there's in some of these old, you know, sort of books, you know, these magicians, these British magicians talk about going to, you know, India, the colony for Britain at the time, and see the Swami rope trick, which as they describe, and I'll describe it and you'll kind of immediately know what I'm talking about because it's kind of permeated pop culture. They describe like, you know, a mystic, you know, playing a flute and it turns a rope into a snake and the snake moves around and then it turns rigid and then they watch this mystic put their flute down and climb this rope and at the top they wave at them and then they jump off the rope and then the rope collapses. And it's like, how did they do this trick? How is this possible? How can they animate this rope? How could they even climb it? There must be a pole somewhere. And nobody's ever figured it out. And also people aren't even sure. They're like, it might just be an apocryphal thing that someone heard a thing from a thing and it's being, you know, re-reported. Mm-hmm. It might not even ever have been possible. Or maybe it's this trick that they're misremembering or what have you. It's been lost to the sands of time, the winds of history. No one's quite sure if this trick has ever been a thing, but it's this unattainable magic goal that people have been, you know, talking about for a century now, right? The Swami rope trick.
Yes.
He's figured out how to do
okay,
it.
And
it's this journey about going into, right, like it's about unearthing this sort of forgotten history and traveling through and, you know, little colonialist vibes. Yes, I agree. But like it's finding that secret and then presenting it finally to the world. It's this big, important, huge thing to them. And who the fuck cares? You climbed a rope.
Yeah. Why would you people like it? Yeah. Like, you know, right? It reminds me of kind of like the end of Assassination of Jesse James actually kind of does. Weirdly enough, it's about murder, but it's a similar thing where I think the brilliance of that movie is like he does kill Jesse James and then they do this like montage of like he's famous, right?
Yes.
Like he goes around, he does some gun shows and it's like, but okay, like it's not that nobody cares, like people do care. It's not about what people do, it's like ultimately you. It's like
they don't care in the way that he wanted them to care.
Yes. So yeah, okay, so this is very interesting to me, like especially what you would do, and I don't know if it's the Swami rope trick or you find like a trick that you want it to be about. So one of the things I love, again, as everyone talks about this, like Penn and Teller like are so brazen about like just being like, again, like they do the ball cup trick with clear cups, right? Like they're like, yeah, it doesn't really, like we're going to show off the technique of what we're doing. This movie essentially is a let's put on a show type movie, right? Like you're with this struggling magician who stumbles onto the secret or comes up with an idea for how to do the Swami rope trick or how to do this amazing trick, right? And this is going to be their ticket to the big time. And they're going to go on this quest and they're going to put a team together of other magicians and engineers and friends and, you know, ex-lovers and all of that with the goal of being like, we're going to do this trick and it's going to be great. And then you see the pursuit of that dream, how much they have to sacrifice to it, right? So you do, oftentimes movies like this will have like a burgeoning relationship, right? And then he gives up the possibility of love, or they give up the possibility of, you know, a relationship with their dying parent or with their kid or something like that. Because this trick, this task, it requires everything of them. You know, like you have dream sequences where they're haunted by like the magicians of the past and all this stuff. It's almost like a spiritual thing. But then you get to, again, they do the trick. At the end of the movie, they pull the trick off, but then people move on and it just winds up, I don't know. I feel like there's something sticky in there, though.
You know what it is? I like the idea of the rope trick simply because it's like, it's climbing this ladder that you've made for yourself to nowhere.
That's really true, actually. Mm-hmm. That's right? Very like, cool.
Like the visual like metaphor there. I like that metaphor for it. And because at the end of the day, it's like you need to get so wrapped up in it that you're like, whoa, this is amazing. And then it's like when it kind of doesn't really land in the same way, you're just like, oh, yeah, I should have seen that coming, I guess. But it isn't it cool? It's like I remember someone said that like you need to, I forgot who, you know, they talk about like the pursuit of a professional career is less fulfilling than the pursuit of like, you know, having a family and all that stuff. But I think that's the question about this, which is like you reach that point at the end where you look back upon your works and you're like, what does that leave you with? And is there something that can be redeemed? To me, it shouldn't just be, well, I shouldn't have done this, right?
Yeah, that's what I was going to get at, because like, it's a very like Nolan, Interstellar, a lot of those movies. I feel like the better versions of the movies aren't like, look at all the things that have, you know, people have been in my way that I've had to sacrifice in order to do this. And now that I've done it, like I'll learn like, okay, I should do that. Because again, I think it's this like moment of kind of self-realization and self-growth that's like, maybe this isn't my whole life. And it's not even about sacrificing. Maybe, again, I think it's actually like the more powerful thing is the realization as you get older of being like, maybe, again, realizing a dream was just a dream. And like, yeah, I really liked magic. I really liked doing this. This was great. I don't know if I want my whole life to be this, though. I don't know if this is the thing that literally is the only thing I love more than anything else in the world. And I have to let it go. And it's hard to let go of something that has been your like drive for so long.
I do love the idea of the end of it being letting go. It's very Buddhist, the idea that, like, it's not that, you know, even necessarily saying that, you know, pursuing a life like this is meaningless or that it, you know, like that, you know, magic is dumb or something like that. I would definitely have one of the people he's working with be someone who this is all they do,
yeah.
But they actually find their life's purpose in doing it, right? The problem is not with, you know, like, and they would do it whether it was one person watching or a million, right? And the problem is that this person, our main character, just is, they have a hole in their bucket, right? Like, they are unable to, like, they just haven't found contentment in their life, and it's not going to come from climbing a rope. It's going to come from really asking themselves what they really want, letting go of the things that are in their way, like finding what's already there, right? Like, that's almost like there's the Swami rope, like there's the ladder to nowhere. You would want another trick in the movie that is a metaphor for like the thing that you've had with you the entire time, like pulling a quarter out of your ear, right? Like, is that you had the quarter the whole time and you didn't know it. Like, the thing you're searching for, you know, it comes from you.
One of the things I like specifically, especially with a lot of like Eastern European stories or like Russian literature, I think is missing in a lot of American stuff, is even then there's like the element of like this choice, this like, you know, for one person, it just happens to kind of like be their calling more so. Mm-hmm. But I think there's like the thing I like in those stories is more like there's an American desire to kind of ignore the reality around you. Like, as long as you push through, or like that person tried harder, it's like, no, the magician, it's not so much that like the other magician wanted it more or made them happier. It's like the other magician doesn't have a sick dad, like doesn't have other stuff in their life. Like, there's realities in the world and there's timing and there's significant, you know, aspects of people's lives that just make the environment's just different. Like, that's just a reality. Like, there are things outside of your control. Like, you know, there's a reason why when you look at a lot of pro athletes or like pro actors and stuff, it's like a lot of them have a non-insignificant similarity when it comes to certain like life stories, like in terms of like, you know, we had a producer always joke that like, look at any actor and they have like parent problems. It's like, yeah, like it's not all, but it's like a common theme. The idea that it's like, it's not that this person likes magic less. It's like this person has a different life. This person has, you know, a dad and mom who they love that is struggling in a business, you know, and have a small town and they have connections elsewhere. And they would have to sacrifice something to continue. And this other person wouldn't. And there's no shame. There's no difference there. It's just the maturity of kind of knowing what your environment is and what your life, you know, can be and being happy with it is like an element of acceptance. Like, there's like, you know, a person growing up in a small town, you know, in a rural, you know, middle of nowhere, you know, town in like Ukraine isn't sitting there being like, oh, this person wanted it.
Oh.
It's like, well, I'm in a small town. Like,
okay, I've got an idea for what this could be. Hear me out. Mm-hmm. You do that, this magician, part of the way they discover this secret is an older magician. Mm-hmm. There's the one guy, there's this one washed up guy who does something that is like, he's like, that's the secret to pulling off the Swami rope. And this person doesn't even realize it, right? And then mm-hmm. this person becomes their partner in crime, so to speak. And the relationship story, they're grinding on this trick. They are learning a little bit from this older magician, but this older magician is someone who has health problems, who is struggling, mm-hmm. and they wind up taking care of them. They wind up forming a relationship with this person that's, you know, like maybe, again, our magician character didn't have a good, you know, relationship with their parents, so there's like a kind of bond here. And our magician is a fucking flake who's never been able to sustain a relationship with anybody, right? But because mm-hmm. this is about magic and because it's about something that they want, they start to create a relationship with this person.
Yeah, at first out of like just a necessity to get what they want, but then as time
yes,
goes on.
Exactly. But then as time goes on, they start taking care of this person and caring for them. Then you would do like the sort of like the climax would be whether it's, you know, I'm not a big fan of the climax where it's like you have to choose between going to the show or doing the thing.
Yeah.
Right. But it's like it would be not the I wouldn't want to make it that explicit, like a binary choice like that, because those always feel like there's a zillion ways around them. But those would be the two forces that are coming to a head, is like this person's desire to go chase this glory or this obligation they feel to take care of this person that they love, you know, like that feels like that there could be a sort of wrestling there. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What happens if it ends with something like they just find there's something I like about like even them going on to fool us and it works, mm-hmm. you know? And it's like, I don't quite know the specifics, but it'd be something like, it was great. Like, they still love magic, but yes, they were taking care of this person. Now, like, they have an opportunity or a chance to, you know, they're working for a charity now or, like, helping this guy out and his family, because that's just what, you know, this person needs a friend and needs somebody, and mm-hmm. he's that person. So they're going to do it. Like, and yes, like, at the beginning of the movie, this person would be sad about it and would do their best to try to do both things. But their goal, like, they were nothing without being a magician, but they're confident enough and they know what they are that, like, you know, again, I was trying to think of something along the lines of, like, you know, if you're doing this magician thing, whatever they end up doing at the end, if they're like taking care of this guy or they're, you know, working at some, you know, store or helping somebody, like, you know, they do a coin trick to somebody and make them smile. It's not that they don't love magic anymore. It's just like their life has gone in a different direction and they're okay with that now.
Yeah. It's one of those.
There's no laughs.
I'm trying to think of what this is. The last thing is, what is the punchline, right? Like, so it's, let's say, okay, so let's take, they're taking care of this older magician, and then mm-hmm. they are, you know, they, who's helping them with a trick, right? And then the, I don't, God almighty, I don't know. they want to see him do the trick at the end, right? Like, that's like, you kind of want to see that.
The final lesson would maybe be so that it doesn't end in this, like, the lesson being not this cynicism, whatever, because we didn't get to a specific, but yes, they've given up magic because they're taking care of this man who, like, is coming, you know, whatever, his house needs to be taken care of, his family's there. Like, he's decided that he wants to take care of this guy, mm-hmm. and that's what he's going to do. He's being a caretaker or whatever.
Oh!
It'd be like if he met somebody, like, and it's like a kid who's like, I want to be a magician. It would be like, not, you know, the lesson's not like, oh, give that shit up, that's just a dream. Like, 1 in 10 people do it. It'd be like, why do you want to be a magician? And it's like, because I love doing it. It's like, well, as long as you keep doing it because you love doing it, then, you know,
here's what I would say. Here's what I say. Mm-hmm. I think this is maybe the arc. I think your low point, actually, or your big midpoint turn, is they give up the trick to take care of the person. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think the next chunk of your movie is like them living with that decision. Right.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
and then I think that there's a pain there that they're in denial about. Right. They're like, well, I did the right thing. But it's like, it's killing them that they gave up on magic, and they almost, like, it hurts them so much that they don't do magic anymore. Right. Mm-hmm. It's like, that's in my past. I don't do it. You know, like, I'm taking care of this guy now. Like, you almost even do a time jump or something like that, where they're taking care of this old man who's now dying. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, I gave up the best years of my magic career to take care of a dying old man, you know, who doesn't even recognize me when I look in his face anymore. There's a sadness there. But then what I would do is, there's an opportunity to do the trick. Like, the mm-hmm. fool us is coming to town, or there's a magic show in town and they want him to do the trick. And then essentially what it is it's the synthesis, it's the recognition, right? Because it's like, you know, like, there's a sort of like running from it because, like, you have this pain, right? Like, from this failed life that, you know, you have all these emotions about. But then the end would be doing the trick for the right reasons, essentially, like performing the trick and just for the joy of it, right? Like, like you did back when you were a kid before you had any dream of becoming a professional magician or whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then it would be like the old man sees him do the trick, and the town likes it. And again, it's not a huge, it's not Vegas, it's not whatever, but he does the trick for the right reasons. And then, you know, like, there's a catharsis there, right? Where it's like, just because I'm not a magician doesn't mean I can't love magic and have it be a part of my life. You know
what
I mean?
There'd almost be like an immaturity of him be like, oh, I'm not a magician anymore, I can't do it. It's like, well, you still have this skill, like, go show it off. Like,
yeah, and
he's
like,
doing Fool Us because he's got a great trick that he can show that's entertaining, not because before the idea of like trying to get onto Fool Us was like, this is gonna be my next step in my career and be famous after this.
Yeah.
And then it's like, once that happens, he's like, well, I'm not gonna do it because I'm not gonna be famous. I don't wanna become a magician anymore. I've already given up that life. It's like, well, no, that's not why you're doing it.
And that would be the one lesson that the dying, again, nothing says serious movie like a veteran actor in a role where they're playing someone dying, you know, and then, you know, this is their big Oscar moment. So, you know, it's Clint Eastwood as the old magician. He's dying in the hospital bed and he says, before I die, I want to see you do that fucking trick. Would be the thing, right?
Oh, that'd be good.
And the main character's like, I'm not fucking doing the trick. I gave that up. I gave it up for you, right? And he's like, I want you to do the trick. Because the old person knows, like, they've got to go do the trick. They've got to go to the show and do the trick. Or they'll never find happiness, right? Mm-hmm. So then it would be, they go into the show at the end with a chip on their shoulder, not wanting to do it, just like wanting to get it over with. But then in the act of doing it again, they find themselves and they find the real joy and they find balance.
And then they throw the trick away. And then as the last line, as they're walking down the alley, as they throw it away and the camera kind of dollies down into it, he goes like, well, I guess no one will know that the answer to that trick was nuclear fusion.
I said the real way we make this a serious movie that will win us Oscars is the main character, let's just say he's played by Freddie Wong, is Chinese, and Clint Eastwood is an old racist man who just got to get over. He says a bunch of racist jokes, but like the movie knows he's being racist, like it's funny, and then at the end he's gonna like get over it also, and it's also about, you know, American, you know, racial politics.
Yeah, boom.
And he goes like, well, I guess no one will use this, my perpetual motion machine. And that pans up, and then the serious dog winks at camera.
Yep.
Ah, there we go.
He goes, that would have been a more fun episode.
And then Clint Eastwood is like watching it in his hospital bed. You know, he's watching the trick from his hospital bed, and then he says kind of like a racially insensitive thing, but like in a positive way, like, that kid's really did a good job, but you know, he says a bad word, and the nurse is like, oh man, well, your heart's good, though.
Your heart's good. Well, no, it's actually not. It's failing. We got.
Oh, you're dead. You're well-intentioned. Oh, wait. No, that doesn't matter. You're dead now. Okay.
All right. You know what? This is a philosophical episode. A lot of stuff to think about.
Deep thoughts.
Well, don't worry, everybody. We'll do space talk.
Only laughs, only kids, only presidents. It's Lincoln Logs 2 next week on Story Break.
Speaking of which, did we get a good fan art? Because I saw some stuff for Lincoln Logs.
Yeah, baby. Sam Archangel coming back out of retirement on Twitter with a very, very, very fun Lincoln Logs poster featuring, you guessed it, Macaulay Culkin, and you guessed it, Abraham Lincoln's face photoshopped onto Hatsune Miku.
I think Sam Archangel is going to go back into retirement after listening to this episode. He's like, the boys are back. I'm going to do some fan art. Okay, well,
if
wait.
If I don't get any fan art of this sad, bummer magician movie with Freddie and old racist Clint Eastwood. No, I'm just kidding. Don't feel like you have to do that.
Don't do that fan art.
You can check out that fan art on twitter.com/RJStoryBreak, or you can go to our Facebook group, bit.ly/StoryBreakFB.
All right.
That's going to do it for us this week. Thank you so much for listening from the bottom of our butts. Nice.
Bring it back, baby. Get the comedy back in here.
Yeah. Woo! Baby.
Butts, boners, farts.
Story Break is a proud member of the Maximum Fun Podcast Network. I feel very strange saying that after Will's outburst, but thank you so much to Maximum Fun for having us on their great podcast network. You can find us and a bunch of other podcasts too at MaximumFun.org. Chad Ellis edits this thing. Matt Arnold, Will Campos, and Freddie Wong are the ones behind the mics. Thanks so much for listening, folks. My name is Freddie Wong.
I'm Will Campos.
My name is Matt Arnold. And if B is the funniest letter, but baby boy, what do you think is the most serious letter?
I think J.
J. Ooh, jar.
No, you Jay. No.
Justice.
Except, you know, you smoke them J's, baby.
Damn, that's true. We'll think about it.
Bye.
Hi. Are you someone who thinks that when one door closes, another one opens?
Someone who always sees the light at the end of the tunnel?
If you answered yes to one or both of these questions, good for you.
We are not those people.
Nope. I'm Annabelle Gurwitch, and I'm a, you know that other door opening? It probably leads to a broom closet kind of person.
And I'm Laura House. When I see a light at the end of a tunnel, I assume it's a train headed right toward me.
Laura and I have created a brand new podcast for people like us. It's called Tiny Victories. We're sharing personal tiny victories or things we've read or seen that inspire resilience.
So if you're looking for a tiny reason to get out of bed each week, subscribe to Tiny Victories.
Available on Maximum Fun or wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's get tiny.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.